Welcome to Inflection Point Podcast, where we cultivate change from the inside out as we ponder the Cairo question. Will Cairo have to protest in his lifetime for the birthright to freely and peacefully exist in the skin in which he was born? We stand on the belief that dismantling racism goes beyond laws and legislation or politics and economics. Here, anti-racism activation is presented as an inside job where personal transformation and accountability impact social change. So take a seat at the anti-racism activation table with Inflection Point Podcast.
Well, hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the newest episode of Inflection Point Podcast, where we are dedicated to the art of listening and authentic conversation. We challenge our audience to listen actively and intentionally for the purpose of self-awareness, understanding, and ultimately personal transformation and social impact. I am your host, Anita Russell, and here's a quick hello from co-host Mavis and Gail.
Hello, I'm Mavis Bauman. Thanks so much for listening.
Hi, I'm Gail Hunter, and thanks for coming.
So if you have been following us, you know that we've been doing this series called the Sankofa Generational Leadership Continuum. And so we've been having these conversations with people that I consider to be generational leaders. And today's episode is no different. And so we define the Sankofa leadership continuum as a through line from historical leaders of the past to contemporary leaders of the present to those who will emerge as future leaders. So we meld together historical and contemporary reality, and through this through line inspires resistance, activism, art, literature, ethnography, research, all designed to fuel transformation. So we are very blessed to have a very special woman as our guest today. Her name is Jen Frank Ahagotu. Jen Franks Ahagotu, excuse me. So she is a Harvard College graduate and founder and CEO of Disruptive Truth, LLC. She is here to gather Black women together to speak their truth and change the world. Her current project is called the Black Woman World Record, and it honors the educational achievements of Black women. And on September 8, 2023, Black women from across the world will upload pictures of themselves with their graduation certificates to social media and create this massive visual presentation of Black female education, our impact, our stories, and our joy. So Jen, I've given our audience just a quick overview of who you are. So let's get started by you telling us who you are.
Sure. Well, I first just wanted to say thank you so much for having me on your show. I love this idea of generational leadership. I think it's so forward-thinking and very, you know, when you think of leadership, really, it's about having that long-term impact, right? And so I'm just really thrilled to be talking about this project, which is all about that generational leadership with you ladies. So like you said, my name is Jen Franks Ahagotu. I am the founder of Disruptive Truth, LLC. And it is true. Our current project is called the Black Women World Record. And what we are doing is on September 8th, we are inviting Black women from around the world who have a high school diploma or above. And we are posting pictures of ourselves with those certificates, with those diplomas, to have this massive visual representation of the achievements of Black women online. And it is unprecedented. It is a world first. And we're very excited to do this because for so many different reasons, but because the representation of Black women is really important, and also often gets overlooked in many different places. So really the main focus of this particular project is to have that visual representation where you're going through your social media and you just see photograph after photograph after photograph of Black women with these things that we have already achieved and are now sharing with the world in a massive way.
Excellent, excellent. All of that sounds so incredibly exciting, and it aligns so well with our Sankofa leadership continuing in the series of conversations that we've been having. So can you talk to our audience and tell them how your work as a disruptive truth teller aligns with generational leadership?
Yes, yes. So yeah, let's get into that. So disruptive truth telling is really all about, it starts with an inner disruption, right? So it's not so much about trying to change everybody else. It starts with, well, who am I really? What is it that I want to say? What is it that I want to put into the world in a really deeply honest way? And that may or may not sound disruptive to you, but I will say that in my own life, and then also with many of the women who I've spoken to, really getting deep down to what it is that we really want and what it is that we really have to say is not something that we are accustomed to doing. It's not something that we necessarily learn from others. Oftentimes we're learning how to be and how to act in the way that other people want us to. And so that disruption starts from within. And then that connection to generational leadership, I think, you know, what it really is that when I think about generational leadership, I think about it on a very deep level, right? So it's not, listen, leadership is important and we've all known leaders and many of us have been leaders in some form or fashion. But when I think about generational leadership, it's almost like I can feel that in my gut. Do you know what I mean? It's like, we're not just talking about moving up the corporate ladder, for example. We're talking about something deep and fundamental that has to do with a through line, like you were saying, from our ancestry to future generations. And so when you explore and then choose to speak your disruptive truth, it's coming from that place, that ancestral place, that generational place, that place that disrupts you in a way that can then disrupt, disrupt ancestrally and then also down into the future. So yeah, I think that's the connection when I think about it.
Excellent, excellent. So I actually want to read a quote, and this is a quote from the Shine Out Loud interview that you had done. And I think this quote really, really speaks to what you just said. And here's the quote. Jen is a disruptive truth teller. She is the best in the world at empowering visionary Black women business owners and personal brands to speak their disruptive truth and ascend beyond success to generational wealth and freedom. So I'm going to throw in generational wealth, freedom, and leadership into that quote. And I love everything that is packed in that quote. And one of the things I'd like you to kind of dig a little bit deeper is this idea of Black women speaking their disruptive truth.
Sure, sure. So what does it mean to speak your disruptive truth, right? That's what I'm hearing you ask. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you about the first time that I spoke my disruptive truth in a way that where I knew I didn't have the words. I didn't know what a disruptive truth was. I didn't have that language, but this is what it was. So I was working in New York City, and I was working in central offices in New York City and working on this major project that was working with 250 schools every single year. That went through this program, and it was all about helping those schools to improve, right, in various different ways. And it was this incredible project, and I love working on it. And so we had a team of folks who worked on that project and then went out into schools to help the schools to improve. And, you know, just like many cities, and New York City in particular, you can't have a conversation about working on and improving schools unless you are talking about race, period. It needs to be talked about. It's there whether you say it or not, right? So we had gotten to the point with this program where we really needed to talk about race. That needed to be an important layer on the way that we were creating the program. But the thing was that we as a team had not talked about race. And yet there were all of these different microaggressions happening, things being said. And, you know, for those of you who work with teams, especially teams that are that have different people from different races, backgrounds, cultures, it can be challenging, right? Because for many different reasons, but we don't often sort of speak the same language, or sometimes things can be said and not be addressed, and things that really, really do need to be given an opportunity. People need to have the opportunity to talk about them and to say what's happening, say how they feel. So we were in this situation, and myself as somebody who was a leader in the group was also being microaggressed and having things that were being said to me and having people go above my head and things like that. So we got some training and were able to have conversations about who we were as leaders and who we were as leaders of color. And I remember the very moment, so I had sort of been having private conversations about this, and it was time for me to share how I really felt with our entire team. So imagine we're sitting around in this circle. There are about, I would say, 30 people in the circle, and, you know, people from different races, different backgrounds. And I remember, you know, being given this permission, this opportunity to say, look, I, as a leader in this group, do not always feel like I'm being respected. And I have people who I am supporting, who I am, you know, I am their supervisor, and I don't feel safe. And they're microaggressing me. And I'm saying to the people who are doing this to me. And it was really, I will say that it was one of the most empowering moments that I've ever had in my life. Because it was the first time that I was able to give voice to these things that were always there, but I didn't really have words to talk about it. I didn't really have the opportunity to talk about it. And I certainly had never done anything like that in public before. And while I was talking about it, you could hear a pin drop in this room. And I remember I was kind of shaky, and I was, you know, it wasn't the most eloquent thing that I had ever said, but it was one of the most important things that I have ever said. And, you know, following that, I had people coming up to me and talking. The Black women came up to me and talked about how that was so incredible. They couldn't believe that I had done that. And it was really inspirational. I had some of the white women who I was supporting say, oh my goodness, you know, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize that you know, you were feeling this. I remember a certain situation. Is that one of the situations that you're talking about, right? So we got a chance to unpack all of this. And it all started with being able to speak my disruptive truth.
Excellent, excellent. So Mavis Gale, any comments or questions for Jen?
Yeah, go ahead, Mavis.
Well, I was just thinking as Jen was kind of being introduced, I would love to hear an example of how that disruption happens. Because weren't there other times that you pushed back as an individual, but not in this context of a microaggression as we now know that? We now know microaggressions to be. Because I just always think of myself as a white person who may not know what is a microaggression to a Black person. So it sounds like in this example, the people were very happy to know what they were doing that was offensive. Do you think they did know before, or was it just a big opening, a big learning experience?
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, let's dig into that. So there are a lot of levels to it. One was that I was not as fully conscious of the ways in which I was being affected by the things that people were saying to me or the ways that they were treating me. So for example, a lot of times what happens, particularly for women of color, for Black women, is that we get these messages from other people that we're not good enough. And those messages are everywhere. They're in not being represented. They're in, you know, people questioning your leadership. They're in people going around you and talking to your supervisor as opposed to taking your word as you know, the direct supervisor at face value. And so there are a lot of different things that are happening, having somebody talk over you, lots of things that can be happening, right? And if you're not fully conscious of the fact that there is a sort of racial and cultural element to this, a lot of times it feels like I'm doing something wrong. I'm not getting the attention. I'm doing something wrong. I'm not getting the raise. I must be doing something wrong. And so there are all of these things that really all add up to there's something wrong with you. There's something you're not doing. And so then a lot of times, many of us will compensate for that with things like perfectionism, right? Or continuing to try to work harder because it must be that we're just not working hard enough, or there's something that we're not doing, when really it's not us at all. It's society. And it's not even necessarily, you know, I don't blame white people for all of the cultural aspects of this. It's like us as a culture where this is allowed to happen, right? So it's not, individuals can be, an individual can microaggress somebody, but there's also a lot of cultural layers to it and reasons why people are doing what they're doing, right? So, yeah. So there's that level. The most important level, I think, was for me as an individual to understand that there's nothing wrong with me. Mm-hmm. I am doing an amazing job. Society is giving me messages that I don't deserve, and individuals are giving me messages that I don't deserve. And then in terms of the white women who I was working with, it was an awakening for them too. Absolutely. You know, there are so many things that many of us are not conscious of, regardless of who we are, that have to do with race, that have to do with why are we saying what we're saying, you know? Why are we doing what we're doing? Why are we, you know, treating people in certain ways? Like, we don't even really know all of the time. So it was a major awakening for everybody. I had people respond in all kinds of different ways. You know, I had people talking about, you know, I'm a good person. I swear I'm a good person. Yes, got it. But let's decenter you for a minute, right? I got people who would ask questions and then listen. To be perfectly honest, one of the most important things that, you know, that white people can do when talking to marginalized people is when ask us a question to get to know us better and literally just listen. People are not used to listening. And when you are on the margins, one of the things that is happening is that you're being erased. You're not allowed to be, or you're not in the thick of things. You're on the margins, which means that people are not seeing you. It means that people are not listening to you. And so I think a lot of times what I see is that people are very quick to want to talk and want to rationalize or want to
defend
whatever their perspective is. And they're not listening. So that's my biggest piece of advice. Not that you asked, but that's my biggest piece of advice for anybody who is really wanting to welcome in marginalized people is to listen.
Right. We've talked a lot about listening. I think Anita said something up at the top, you know, authentic conversation where you listen, you know, with sincere attention rather than to respond, right? I was just with a friend this weekend and I was telling her what I was doing and she says, I'm not prejudiced. So even those words were like, let's shut this down, you know, instead of I wanted to just explore some of the levels that I know about so far, but it was kind of blocked already. So yeah, listening is the first thing. And as I've learned to believe what you're saying, you know, it seems to me, the effort to dismiss or debate or equate what's happening to you to someone else, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Because there's that ego. Yeah. There's that ego around.
I just want to very quickly comment on what Mavis just said. And I'm sorry, Jim, but I don't want this thought to leave my head. One of the things that you just said in having that conversation with a white person, let's decentralize you for a moment, because that's really what this is all about. It's about decentralizing you and putting you in a position where the expectation is that you will hear me and that you will authentically, as we say, listen to me. And what Mavis just described is a perfect example of someone not decentralizing, because Mavis is presenting something about something that she's doing. And the person's default position was, I'm not prejudiced. Instead of really listening and paying attention to what Mavis was saying, because Mavis was speaking within the context of herself and what she's doing. And that person missed an opportunity to get a deeper look into Mavis, because she didn't have that power to decentralize herself in the conversation. So I just wanted to make sure that I capture that, because I think that was such an important comment that you made.
Yeah, true, true. And the way the conversation gets shut down if they aren't able to decentralize themselves. I'm loving that too. Thanks, Jen.
So Gail, your comments?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things. I've spent my whole career probably helping people look within themselves as a therapist to what their truth is, right? Whatever the truth is about, because we can't really move beyond where we are in the present without, you know, I'm really pulling up whatever that is and whatever the specific issue it might be about. And so it is so crucial. And I really believe when we do our work, we heal those before us and we heal those that come after us, right? And so that what you're talking about is really the ability to use one's voice and to speak that truth, that disruptive truth, as you call it. And that takes a lot of work to look through those layers and really get honest with ourselves. But we cannot move beyond where we are unless we all do that. We all each have to do that. And whatever the relationship may be, but most of all, certainly in the relationship in working towards anti-racism, we have to be willing to do that. To just say, oh, I'm not prejudiced, is there's so many layers underneath that the generations before us have carried into our own DNA, right? That we have to begin to peel away and look at what that really means and what that's really about. The other piece is the listening. In any relationship, the most important thing, and people tend not to do that, as you said, is listen. You know, they're more focused on what's going on in their own head and how they're going to react or respond to that person than really hearing what is being said. And then, yes, it sets the other up to feel dismissed and not important and not, you know, accepted and not valued at all. And so it's crucial that we all have to practice and work on that listening and in order to share and show that respect for another human being, which we all are a part of this human race, right? And so we need to be able to do that. And Black people, as we've been talking about, have not been able to experience that in a way that they deserve as much as anybody deserves. And it's time that that begins to change. And I love what you're doing here.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it can be really exhausting for people of color to engage in conversations like this, where we're trying to say, listen, you have to listen to me. It's really important. And so I think that, you know, for you, Mavis and Gail, to be engaging with other white people in that, it's really helpful and really supportive that you are doing that, right? And so, you know, I find with different Black people who I know, people of color, other marginalized people, we have different levels of tolerance for that. Some of us have more, some of us are less. And I feel like wherever that person is, I completely respect that. And so in those instances when you're able to talk to somebody and then say, you know, so you're not prejudiced. So, you know, what do you mean by that? Right. A lot of times it's the listening goes both ways, right? It's like, well, what do you mean by that? Because the person means something by that, but prejudice, like, they could mean all sorts of things about that. I just want to say, I really respect you all for, you know, taking on those conversations on behalf of folks of color.
We have to.
It's my pleasure.
It is.
I love it. Gift. Sorry, Gail.
It's a gift that we have that we can use and give back and give to ourselves at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. Love that. And Anita's been a big part of that. Big, big, loving part of that. Pushing back, teaching us. Yeah.
Yeah.
And just the study we've done.
Yes, listening without judgment, I think, is also key. Can we listen to somebody else without judging them in our mind, right? Or deciding that they're right or wrong, or deciding that I'm right or wrong, just by listening and hearing what they're saying, really, really hearing from within. Yeah.
And I like, Jen, when you described that when you were in that room, in that meeting, that you could literally hear a pin drop.
Yeah, I love it.
And so that is kind of an indication that those words that you were bringing forth were impactful and enough that they got people's attention, and they automatically just kind of went into this listening mode. And the more we can have that sort of thing happen, the more we can kind of move forward. I always talk about this grassroots movement upward. And that's where we are. And part of that is where we get that energy to kind of build out that grassroots movement that goes upward. So we have just a few seconds before we go to break. And when we come back, Jen, I'd like to ask you to comment on your affirmative action response on LinkedIn, the article that you had written, because that was probably one of the best responses to that, the Supreme Court's decision that I had seen. And so I'd like you to kind of comment on that when we get back from break.
Sure.
Okay, excellent. So we'll take a break now, and then we'll come back and continue the conversation.
I'm Jim Fannin. I coach champions.
15-minute consult, no obligation. But when you come in, bring us your worries, and we're going to help you get rid of it. But I know all the Zoniacs, you got the mountain that you want to climb, and we're here to help you climb your own personal Mount Everest. You can send me a personal email.
AskJim@JimFannin.com.
Or just go to JimFannin.com.
Be in the zone. It is the only place to be.
What are you connected to? Or what are you disconnected from? Tune into The Connected Conversation with Brett Hill on TTRLive.com and learn how to avoid unnecessary suffering and activate your mind-body connection. Step into a life that works for you. Flourish and express our natural creativity and exuberance as you learn how to look deep within and find your natural allies and connect authentically with yourself, others, and the world. To learn more, visit TheConnectedConversation.com.
The Relevance of Now podcast has been created to assist you in remembering, embracing, embodying, and enjoying your true self, your essence, and your true power that is constantly expanding and unfolding. Within the Relevance of Now, you are stepping out of the requirements to be other than who you are as you remember and experience the uniquely beautiful facet of Creator that you are. For more information, visit williamlinville.com.
Imagine if you could tune into the frequency of creation, the vibration that connects you to the source of all abundance. That's what the Creation Frequency course and book will show you how to do. You will learn from Mike Murphy, who used this technique to go from a miserable and hopeless situation to a successful and happy one. You will also benefit from a 7-week program, a private community, and new tools. The Creation Frequency is not just a course or a book, it's a way of life. Join now and see for yourself.
Do you want to become a host? Start your own podcast to inspire, persuade, and influence others on what you're passionate about? At the Transformation Network, we can help make your talk radio dreams happen. Let's take your hopes, dreams, and passions and put them on air today. Email us at host@transformationtalkradio.com to learn more about becoming a host of your very own show.
Thank you.
So welcome back to Inflection Point Podcast and our series of discussions on the Sankofa Leadership Continuum. We are engaged in a very in-depth conversation with Jen Franks Ahagotu, aka the Disruptive Truth Teller. So she's going to continue the conversation by sharing an article that she had written on LinkedIn that was sort of her personal response to the Supreme Court's decision around affirmative action.
Yeah. Ooh. I just want to start by saying I remember, and it wasn't that long ago, but in you asking that question, like I am being transported back to that moment when I saw the news. I think I saw it on my phone about the reversal of affirmative action. And you know, it's just one of those things that, and we were talking about this in the break, that there are just certain things that you hear or see or experience that you feel like runs through you, right? Like it's you have this visceral reaction to it that's undeniable. And, you know, reading that news item, just, I first felt it viscerally, right? So I was like, wow, this is, I don't even have words yet to describe what this means to me, but I know it means something very profound. And it actually took me a couple of days. I saw a lot of people sort of immediately had responses. And I was like, I'm still processing. Like, I need a minute to figure out what this really does mean to me. And in doing that, I came to something that, you know, a fundamental story that I've been thinking about for a long time. So like you said, I went to Harvard and, you know, I was very proud of doing that. But there were also certain challenges that came with that because it's a predominantly white male institution and was for hundreds of years and has that history, right? Even though they're moving forward and very progressive at this point, that's still the history of the institution. And getting into Harvard is a hard thing to do, right? And so at the time when I was accepted in 1998, I wondered why I was accepted, just like many Harvard students wonder, you know, like, when it's so difficult, why choose me? And then as a Black woman, I thought, well, I probably got into Harvard because I'm Black, right? And that was something that, you know, it really haunted me for a long time, because whenever you're in a space and you're in a community, you want to feel like you're of that community. You want to feel like you belong. You want to feel like there's a space for you, like you're not some sort of imposter or somebody on the margins who just got in on a technicality or something like that, right? So I dealt with that question for a really long time until I remember having a conversation with my dad one time. And interestingly, so I'm African-American, but my dad is actually my stepdad and he is a white guy and like super white. His background is Norwegian, comes from a Norwegian background, blonde haired, blue eyed. But he, for whatever reason, has been able to relate to myself, my mom, my sister on a very beautiful level. And he said to me, it's really important for you to understand that you didn't get into Harvard because you were Black. Harvard is lucky to have you. And because you are Black, first of all, and the things that needed to happen in order for you to be prepared to go to Harvard, which you 100% were, makes you an even better candidate for Harvard. Harvard is lucky to have you. And when he told me that, it really, again, that was another, it was like another disruptive truth, right? That changed my life, changed how I saw myself, changed the way that I speak to my own daughters. I have two daughters, 11 and 14. And so when I think about that affirmative action decision, yes, there are things that are happening politically that we don't as citizens have control over, but we always have control over how we see ourselves and what we see as the value that we bring. And so that was you know, what I wrote about in that article. And I think that's the fundamental thing that I want all marginalized people, all people of color, all Black women to remember, that whenever we step into a room, the folks who are in that room, they're the lucky ones to have us.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Amen. Amen.
Okay. People know.
Yes. Yeah, that was very powerful. Mavis, wow. Yeah, did you have a chance to read her piece? Because she started getting really into her experience of being there. Like, Jen, I don't want to speak for you. I'm just kind of recalling the thing that jumped out at me is how you talked about your roommates and, you know, all of these different experiences. I met my husband at Howard, like all of these experiences that made your presence there meaningful. Mm. Right?
Yeah. It's true.
I haven't read it, but I most definitely will. Did you post it about what time period? Do you remember?
Oh gosh, I want to say it was a couple days after the decision.
Okay. I'll go back further. I couldn't find it. Okay. Very good. That's brave. That takes courage even. I'm sure that piece was disruptive in and of itself.
Yeah, it was. It was. But you know, when you create it, I guess a lot of people who write talk about this. You're speaking to a particular person, right? Particular individual. And when you do that, it could be you or it could be somebody else who you really care about. Then, you know, all of those really deep messages, they're right there. We just, you know, if we access them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So let's shift again the conversation a little bit, although it does kind of nicely flow from everything that we've been talking about. But I want you to share about the Black Women World Record. So here's a quote that I have from you. Black women are worthy. Our contribution deserves to be celebrated and elevated to the highest level in the global narrative. So can you talk a little bit about how that project evolved out of, you know, maybe it evolved out of the Supreme Court decision, or like how did that come to be is what I'm asking.
Yeah, sure. You know, when it all comes down to it, it comes down to my mother. Always comes down to my mother. And my mother was that ultimate, and still is that ultimate role model for me. Ultimate role model of what's possible, of breaking barriers, of the power of the choices that we make in order to shape our lives. And I won't go into, you know, all of her experiences, but she came from humble beginnings and really used the power of education to build the life that she always wanted. And so as a child, that's what I saw. And that's what I knew that Black women did. That's what we did. And so I can't say that the Black Women World Record was inspired by the Supreme Court decision. I had actually started working on that project a little bit before then, some months before. But listen, the Supreme Court decision comes through. There are so many... I'm sure before the end of the world record, there are going to be other things that come through that just underscore why this is so important, right? So it was more like, it was just another example of why this needs to happen. Mm-hmm. Right. So the Black Women World Record, like I said, is on September 8th, 2023. We as Black women around the world are going to share pictures of ourselves with our graduation certificate. Now that's a high school graduation or college, maybe undergrad, graduate school, certifications that you have, anything along those lines. And we are going to flood the internet with pictures of us and our graduation certificates. So the whole point of it is this visual representation. And, you know, anybody who is into any sort of art, right, or any sort of kind of visual expression knows how powerful visuals are. Whenever you think about you know, people who have inspired you along the way, no matter who you are, a lot of times it helped to see somebody who you related to, somebody who meant that you could do it for yourself. And so this is really all about that visual representation at the surface. But when you really go deeper, it's about history. It's about ancestry. It's about generational leadership. It's about, you know, me being able to scroll through my social media on September 8th and show my daughters Black woman after Black woman after Black woman, and for us to have a conversation about what that really means. Like getting emotional about it, but I just got off of a call with women who have signed up to participate in the world record and just hearing their stories, right? So that was the whole purpose of the call. Let's hear your stories. Again, that listening piece. And then we take action, right? We invite more people into it. And, you know, it got emotional and people talking about all different experiences. Anybody from, you know, people who have all, who went to Harvard with me, who were like, I didn't always feel like I belonged there, to women who are at 75 years old getting their associate's degree because it was always a dream of theirs. So I can't even remember exactly what your question was, but I will say that the Black Women World Record is really about representation. And it's about us creating our own visual of who it is that we have always been on our own terms.
Mm-hmm. That is so incredibly powerful, because one of the things when sort of looking at where we are now with this whole thing with the Sankofa Leadership Continuum and this whole thing of history, like I look at Inflection Point podcast through that lens of racial literacy, historical literacy, but also visual literacy. And so these images and these pictures, because if you think about, there are certain iconic images that when we think about, for example, the civil rights movement, there are these iconic images that have just been there, and people can look at those images and those images can speak to us, right? And so mm-hmm. that's what I see as the power of the way you selected this to be this visual kind of thing, because it will add to people's visual literacy as people are digging more and deeper into some of the issues with inequities and inequalities and how we're going to move forward to fix some of these things, right? So you're really contributing to something amazing.
Thank you.
You've given every woman that's going to be showing their picture the ability to feel empowered, right? And to say, I matter. And who I am is important. And this is what I've accomplished. I mean, that's just incredible.
Yes. And it's just who you are today. Right. You don't have to be better. You don't have to do more. It's an appreciation of what you have already done. And I think that that's so important. And then relating to the visual, so, you know, we've chosen the birthday of Ruby Bridges. And so many of us know the picture of her, you know, between these federal marshals, just going to school, right? And that just that picture, a lot of us can picture that. And so this is a continuation of that.
Absolutely, absolutely. So
ask a quick question, Anita. Just a practical question. Will all of those pictures go to one page on Instagram in addition to their own postings, or will they be on a website, or how's that going to work?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we are encouraging people to post on their own social media, because that, you know, that allows the message to be spread further. And then we're asking everybody to post with a hashtag, which is Black Women World Record. Okay. So that way we can track it. And then in addition to that, so to be honest, with the world record, this is actually, it has to be a certified world record, right? So I'm partnering with a production company who is going to be literally checking every single hashtag, every single picture, so that we can count all of the impacts that we're having. And then we will have our own page where we're listing all of the participants, and all of the women who sign up to participate will be world record holders themselves, right? It's really all about the community. Everybody who signs up will be a world record holder, will have their own digital certificate with artwork designed by a Black woman on it. And that's how we track it. And we're anticipating other projects of a similar nature have gotten a million impacts. So that's a million individual people seeing these posts in 24 hours, which is incredible.
That is amazing.
Can't wait. This is going to be exciting to see. So sorry I interrupted you, Anita.
No, I was just actually going to comment on the conversation that you and I had when we were talking about the one, and again, it kind of gets into this whole thing with this visual literacy and how two individuals can look at one image and see completely different things. And one of the examples in our conversation, Jen, was that we were talking about there are a couple of iconic images that really show like a lynching, right? And so in that conversation, what Mavis and I realized is that what we get out of looking at that image was very different. And so when Mavis looked at it, she saw one thing. When I looked at it, I saw something else. And what Mavis saw, now I don't want to speak for you, Mavis, but I'm just kind of paraphrasing a little bit of what you said. Is that her focus was on the Black man that had been lynched and killed and all of that. And while I obviously saw that, but my focus was on the smiles that I was seeing on the white people's faces after they'd done something so horrendous to another human being. So again, just really saying all of that to say that that power of the visuals, I think today is so valuable when you think about, you know, videos and all kinds of things that we are, you know, that are more visual. And now we're putting out things that really have the capacity to increase our visual literacy.
Yes, exactly. Oh, that's so interesting. Because I know as I've been researching Ruby Bridges, just the part that I really feel again is like the people who were there and the white people who were, you know, yelling at her and screaming at her and, you know, all of these, we don't need to go into all the details about that, but yeah, just the context, right? That she was in. So that's very interesting. Yeah. It's so many things and why it's so wonderful for us to have these conversations, because then we get to have more context and more deeper understanding
and awareness,
conversations with each other.
Absolutely.
And what we need to be aware of, right? What we need to be actually really looking and seeing. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. And our time is winding down at this point. So I want to make sure, Jen, that whatever your call to action is, that you kind of put that information out there, website, LinkedIn, whatever it is you want to put out there for our audience so they can kind of connect with you, follow up with the project that you're doing and all that.
Yes, thank you. So with the Black Women World Record, the call to action is to join us. So again, we are inviting Black women who have a high school diploma and above, undergrad, graduate, certifications, all of those things. We want to be, you're all invited. And you can go to our website, which is blackwomenworldrecord.com. And I know there's a link around here somewhere. And sign up. All you need to do is add your name and your email address, and then you are signed up. And we've got a Facebook group. Like I said, we are building community. We are listening to each other's stories. We are interviewing women who are part of the project. So we're trying to find as many ways as possible to tell our stories and to have people hear our perspective and hear from us and for us to hear from each other. So If you are a Black woman with a high school diploma and above, please join us. We are here for you. We are ready for you. We are, you know, opening our arms, and would love to have you in the community. Now, if you are somebody who wants to support the project, I mean, I honestly have been so touched by the outpouring of support from so many different people. The call to action is to share this with your Black female friends. You know, it's really, we honor each other by inviting, you know, you honor Black women by inviting them into something like this, right? So I think sometimes people are a little bit nervous, like, well, how do I approach that? Or how do I, just with sincerity, I found out about this. I think you should know about it here. Sign up if you're interested, and I can't necessarily be a part of it, but I think it would be amazing for you to be honored as part of this project. So anybody can do that. So either sign up, honor somebody by inviting them in to sign up, and we are going to be making history on September 8th. Look out for the hashtag Black Women World Record. Show some love on our posts, and yeah, we're going to do amazing things. So look out for September 8th.
Excellent, excellent. So Jen, I want to thank you so much for coming on Inflection Point Podcast and kind of sharing your story, sharing your message. And I'm hoping that people will definitely go to the website, check out the hashtag Black Women World Record, and just support this amazing project. So we are just about out of time for this episode. So I'd like to leave our audience with this challenge quote. And this quote comes from Harlem Renaissance poet Langston Hughes. Hold fast to dreams, for if dreams die, life is a broken winged bird that cannot fly. So I chose this quote because it reminds me of a couple of things. In an earlier project that I was working on, I had a gentleman, he goes by the name of Treble NLS, and he's in Pittsburgh. He's a part of an organization called One Hood Media, and he wrote a poem. It was actually an award-winning poem called Don't Clip Our Wings. And so when I hear that statement, that poem from Langston Hughes, it aligns so very well with this poem that he was putting out there, Don't Clip Our Wings. And then
Don't clip our tails.
I'm sorry. Yeah, don't clip our tails. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That. Yeah, don't clip our tails. Very, very powerful. Very powerful message and the visuals and everything. Mm-hmm. So the final question that I have is actually for our audience. It's actually related to the Cairo question. And so the Cairo question is, will Cairo have to protest in his lifetime for the birthright to freely and peacefully exist in the skin in which he was born? So the final question to our listeners is this: what are you willing to do to participate in creating an equitable future for little Black boys and girls like Cairo? And Cairo happens to be my 3-year-old grandson. This is a fundamental question in striving toward a nation and a world that is free from the bondage of racism, injustice, and inequity. So I leave our audience with those words. Be sure to go and check out Jen Frank's AHA GoTo and learn all about her project. And I just wanna thank our audience for joining us, and we'll see you the next time on Inflection Point Podcast. We are here every first and third Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific time, 6 p.m. Eastern time on Transformation Talk Radio, and we will see you at the next episode. Thank you for listening to Inflection Point Podcast, where our mantra is cultivating change from the inside out. The journey towards anti-racism and social change doesn't stop here. Truth,
reconciliation and healing come from ongoing, open, honest, and deliberate conversations. Continue to dive in and deconstruct your thoughts, ideas, and beliefs as we band together to manifest social change. Tune in to Inflection Point Podcast every first and third Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, here on TransformationTalkRadio.com for more conversations about how we can cultivate change from the inside out.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers.